listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Daily Gold Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with my good friend, Sean Broderick. I think it's been a couple of years since I've had him on the show. Sean is a natural resources analyst with Uncommon Wisdom Daily. He wrote a recent column there titled Your Golden Opportunity, where essentially Sean is not really worried about the gold market and the big picture. He thinks it made an important bottom in January 2016. I happen to agree with that, but I'll let Sean talk about it. Sean, it's good to have you on. Can you talk about what you see exactly with gold and what you wanted readers to get out of your latest column?
Sure, and I'll send you a link that you can post so that people can see the chart that I put up there, because what people have to understand about gold is it's really cyclical. I'm sure many of your listeners understand that, but people who are new to these markets just don't understand how cyclical it is. And most bull markets in gold last between 4 to 7 years. And we entered one in January of 2016. It should have quite a ways to run. The first couple years, maybe 3 years, tend to be the strongest, but everyone is different. So you don't want to predict exactly where things will go. It's just that since we're in this very bullish market, pullbacks can be bought. And we've had some doozies of pullbacks. I mean, I've sold out because I said, what the heck is going on? I had all these nice gains, and then, you know, it starts to fall off. So you sell out, and then it goes higher, and you buy again and all this. Well, it seems like we just hit another bottom with the rate hike from the Fed. Now, it may not be the bottom, because oftentimes we see gold really kind of head lower into the end of March. And so, but soon anyway, we should see the next bottom. It's really hard to predict, but when it comes, it'll be a great buying opportunity. And I don't think people should worry too much about holding what they have now. You know, these things have been tested. And as this trend gets going, it's really going to be great if what's happened in the past is a prologue for what's coming. Of course, again, everything can be different, but we're in this bull market. Pullbacks generally can be bought, and you can make a heck of a lot of money once this thing really gets rolling.
Right, and let's zero in on the junior miners, because I know that's one of your favorite subjects. What areas of the juniors do you find the most appetizing right now, or which areas are you maybe waiting for to get a little bit cheaper? I mean, what subsets of the sector itself are you looking at focusing on in the weeks and months ahead?
Right. Well, I actually talked to a lot of great companies up in Toronto at the PDAC, and there are some really intriguing possibilities there. One thing that I'm looking at is streamers, and the problem with the big streamers is they're really competing against each other. But there's a smaller space for these small streams, and I talked to one company, which I'll be recommending to my subscribers soon. I'd like them to get a U.S. listing, but you can't have everything. They really go for the small streams, but they're putting a really good package together of these small streams that they're actually going to pick up. But speaking more generally, and one thing is that people get all excited about gold, but speaking to the people at the conference, it's becoming rather plain that a pure play silver mine is a rare thing indeed. So if you have a company that is working on a deposit that has the potential to be a pure play silver mine, or it was in the past, and so they're going to bring it back online and stuff, if it has decent grades, that is a rare thing indeed. And when they finally sell it, because most of them that are doing this work are actually looking to sell, they could do extraordinarily well. So if I were your listeners, I'd be looking around those miners working down in Mexico, seeing which ones have some nice silver mines that they'll probably be putting on the market already, and thinking they will make a killing. And I also looked at other companies that are overseas mining for gold. It's hard to find the really high grades here, but you can find them overseas. There are some small companies, you know, just working away, doing their thing out in the jungles, literally, with some very high-grade projects. We haven't heard about them yet, but we will down the road. And so if people roll up their sleeves, do their homework, they will find these. And I think that it's a great time to be picking these things up. You aren't buying at the exact bottom. Again, you know, that was back in late January 2016. But that doesn't matter, because compared to where many of these are going, you can do extraordinarily well. You don't have to grab the first slice, you know. You can make yourself a really nice sandwich with what's left over. And that's what we're probably going to see going forward.
Yeah, I like that analogy. There's a couple things I want to follow up with you on your answer. But generally, I think that's a great point about looking overseas. I mean, not to say that you can't find high grade or companies can't make a high grade discovery, you know, in the U.S. or in Canada. But I mean, as you know, I mean, many of those areas have been picked over so much that it's sometimes the jurisdictions overseas where they're going to find better grades. I know the politics may be a little more difficult, but is that, I mean, in your research and your own travels, is that what you've been finding, that there's a better potential overseas to really make the high grade discoveries?
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. As you said, it's not like we can't do it here in North America. In fact, I was talking to one gold explorer that you know, just was working in Canada, in Quebec, has some really high-grade visible gold that nobody got around to mining before because this project was owned by larger companies. And if you ever talk to the guys who have been at the table for the larger companies, there's always 16 people. They're all shouting to get their project worked on. And so this one was completely abandoned, and this small company picked it up. And so that's really interesting, if they can get funding. If they can't, someone else is going to get that, right? But overseas, my gosh, when you go out in the jungles, especially down in like Latin America, Central America, stuff like that, there are places that had political turmoil that don't have that political turmoil anymore. And so it's just gold rush time, man. I mean, you know, because they knew they had great projects. And if you go, for example, you look at the border between Chile and Argentina, and there are some fantastic projects on the Chile side, and they aren't there on the Argentina side. And it's not that the actual deposit stopped. It's just that you couldn't build that mine in Argentina. Now, you know, now the politics have changed there. Now it's a much better time to look for something down there. So I think we'll see some extraordinary discoveries coming out of there. And that's just precious metals. My God, there's a lithium boom going on down in the lithium triangle down there. I talked to three companies, and I swear they were coming out of a cloning machine because they're all working in the same area. They all have experts who have done this before, and they all have big plans. At some point, those companies have to buy each other because, you know, there's only so much room down there in that huge lithium triangle that so they're going to be stepping on each other's toes, but it's very exciting to see. And the other thing that I like has to be cobalt. I mean, we saw the lithium boom, and sure, I like nickel. There's some great nickel projects, but when you think about the things that go into the new batteries, cobalt is, it seems to be the missing ingredient. You know, I mean, there are projects in like Africa that actually produce it, but the way they treat their miners, especially the child miners and stuff, is just bad news. So the race is on to find new cobalt mines in much better jurisdictions. And so I was hearing a lot of excitement about that. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out as well.
And you were talking to me about uranium before we started recording. Any comments you want to share on that?
Yes. For three straight years, uranium miners promised me that, like, every month, that was going to be the month that uranium bottomed, and for three straight years, they were wrong. Now, there's a good reason for this. You don't get into the mining business unless you're an optimist. It's not a business for pessimists, you know, and so they have to be optimistic. And so I can understand why they were optimistic. But now things are finally seem to be turning out that it might actually be happening. And not because of the price action we're seeing in the actual spot price of uranium, which is still incredibly low, but because of the action in the stocks. The stocks that actually deal in it, they are really starting to perk up. They are making some impressive gains. And in fact, I'm writing about that today for my Uncommon Wisdom Daily subscribers, talking about URA, which is the, you know, that's the uranium company ETF. It has like, I think 26 of them in there. And, just looking in at that, it's an ETF. So it has lower risk. You maybe don't have the high return potential that you do in like individual stocks. But along with a chart of that, I also put a chart of like Cameco. And anybody who's watched Cameco since January has seen the roller coaster of doom that that freaking stock has been on, you know, down 18.5%, then in like one day, then it recovers, then down 19.5% in 2 days, and then it recovers, and then it goes on this slip and slide lower and stuff like that. That just must be giving people heart attacks. So for those listeners of yours who like do want to invest in like natural resources and they're kind of scared of, you know, single stock risk, and it is a real risk, then, well, for one thing, you should never be actually be, you should never put too much money in like one position. I think that if you invest more than 3% of what you're going to invest overall in any one position, you're a fool. But everyone has their own individual things, but also the ETFs, which are more focused on these areas, and yet they have liquidity. That's so important. If you're going to go into an ETF, it has to be liquid. I mean, they can ride that particular industry that they're in, whether it's silver, junior gold miners, big gold miners, you name it. They can ride that industry incredibly well. And so that's one way for people to play it. But however you like to play uranium, if you're like me, you've had 3 years of bad news and you don't believe these guys anymore. But now the stock action is telling a different story. So you might want to take another look.
Yeah, great point there, because this is the stock action, Matt. The stock action really matters.
Yes.
Just a follow-up question on all these things, Sean, just so we're not optimistic about everything. Is there any area of the commodity sector or any specific group of companies that you're not that optimistic on or that you think people should avoid for the time being?
Well, I think coal probably got overbought. I mean, it had a great run. No one's going to argue against that. But how much run can really be left there? Iron? I mean, there's new capacity coming online. Why are they bringing new iron capacity online? That's stupid. My God, the world seems oversupplied in that right now. Other than that, I mean, those are two things that come to mind along with some agricultural commodities. But, I mean, even things like copper. I mean, look at a chart of copper. That's doing extraordinarily well. They say that, you know, that's the metal with a degree in economics because it knows where the global economy is going. Right now, we are hearing from copper that there is going to be growth around the world. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but that's what that metal is telling us. And if it's not just gold, if we're in a big upcycle in these commodities generally, what does that mean? That means that, you know, you can look pretty smart just by spacing out some bets, picking up some things, and like seeing what goes higher, cut your losses on the things that don't, and just ride the ones that really go. Because if this is an upcycle, it could get quite entertaining and quite rewarding. And so I'm hoping on that. You always prepare for the worst, hope for the best. And but right now I have to say I'm more hopeful than not.
And Sean, just because it's been a while since we've chatted, I've been following your columns, and you were talking about Donald Trump and winning the election, and you were talking about that the months leading up to it, you predicted that he would win. What do you think his impact is going to be on the commodity sector going forward?
That's a great question, and let's be completely honest about this. Yes, I predicted he would win a full year before he won. However, I also thought that his win would send gold higher. I was wrong about that. So as long as we've got all that out on the table, if he follows through on his plans to rebuild U.S. infrastructure, that, of course, will be very, very good for all sorts of things. Will he build the wall? I have no idea. But I know that some companies are gearing up like he's going to. But all he really has to do is generally keep people in a good mood, provide optimism, because that's really what a president's job is, to make people feel optimistic, to spend money and stuff like that. So if he can keep people optimistic, you know what? It seems like our housing boom, which was dead as a doornail for a while, seems to be cycling around again. And if housing starts to take off, and I'll tell you, look at those ETFs, if you want to get an eyeball, they're looking really great. If housing really starts to take off, then that really feeds into all sorts of things. That's really, really good. So I hope President Trump just keeps people optimistic and happy, not just Wall Street, but also Main Street. And then things could be very good for all sorts of commodities. I was wrong about gold, though, or at least in the short term. I have to say that now gold is finally reacting the way we thought it would react when he actually got elected. So who knows? Maybe it was just a push back, but not really, you know, completely gone. We'll see how that works out, too.
Well, you can't take credit for gold popping for the first hour or two, whatever it was, because there is a well-known commentator, and on just some of his advertising materials, they were claiming that he did predict Trump would win. He also predicted gold would explode, and even though gold exploded for an hour and that was it, he's still claiming in the advertising materials that he predicted everything correctly, even though gold took a big dump after that initial pop. So,
Depends
what your time frame is, I guess.
Right, exactly.
Sean, before I let you go, one last question. I mean, you've dispensed a lot of wisdom here, but I like to ask my guests just one idea for how you can help our listeners make money in the next several months or 6 months or whatever time you'd like to choose. It can be a stock pick if you want. It doesn't have to be. Anything you can share that you think will help listeners make money in the months ahead.
Well, you know, one thing, I certainly could give them a stock pick, but I hate to fire and forget, you know, because I tend to change my mind about things. Let me tell you a story about that. I was speaking at the Orlando Money Show, and I was laying out a good case for gold, which kind of worked out. But one thing I was absolutely sure about was that the Fed would not raise rates. And then just a couple weeks ago, we saw Janet Yellen change her stripes on that completely, right? And all the doves that were on the Fed with her suddenly pulled off their masks, and they were inflation hawks. And so these kind of things happen to individual stocks. But let me tell people this, and it is something they can do not only in stocks but in their real lives. It looks like we're into a virtuous cycle for real estate now, not just U.S. investors, not just people in Canada, but we seem to be attracting people from around the world to come and invest in U.S. real estate. And so if you get a piece of that, you can do extraordinarily well. And so that might be something people want to look at. And there are some stocks that will help you do that, too. And so that can also work out very well.
Okay, thanks for that, Sean. And before I let you go, can you please tell our listeners where they can go to follow your work?
Sure. You can go to uncommonwisdomdaily.com. And I seem to be writing multiple columns a week there. In fact, I think I'm writing the afternoon column until I launch my new premium publication. So I hope you come. I hope you read it. It's not just me. There are actually smarter people than me working here at Uncommon Wisdom Daily. So check it out. And some of these guys are just ringing the cash register left and right. Hopefully they can make me some money, too. So head over here, read my stuff, read the other stuff. It's all working out. And I'm looking forward to a great next quarter. It's going to be very good.
All righty, Sean. Thanks so much for coming on. And let me know when you launch your premium publication. I can have you back. We can talk about that. Good to talk to you, Sean. And I look forward to speaking with you again in the weeks and months ahead.
Thanks very much. It's always great to talk to you, Jordan.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.